Thanks for joining us on the Hunting Public Podcast. It's December 5th, and we're in the middle of the first shotgun season, and we've actually had some success on the public land the last couple of days. So on today's podcast, we're going to be discussing that success. We're going to be talking about our future plans as we move into the second shotgun season and the muzzleloader season, and we're going to be taking questions, as always, from the live Facebook and Instagram feed. So with that, let's get right into it. All right. We have got a few questions that we're going to start off with this evening. Brody, what are the questions here?
The first question is from Andrew. He's wondering about hunting Nebraska like we did earlier this hunting season. He's wondering about what he should look for when choosing a parcel of public land to hunt in Nebraska where the landscape is mostly open grasslands. What stuff, you know, should he look for?
What we were looking for when we were out there, and it's going to vary on, I would say, what piece of public land you're on, but we were looking for, like always, you know, our initial thoughts were look for stuff that's far away from the road, or mm-hmm. you can get far enough away from the road, and then any change in habitat, you know, there was lots of, we were in the sand hills, so mm-hmm. there was like mostly really open sandy hills, and there were some lakes down there that had kind of marshes around them, so there was, you know, habitat change there, and that's where those deer were bedding.
Yeah, majority of the deer were close to where the lakes were.
Yep.
Right down in that low ground near the lakes, cattail marshes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty easy to narrow down where they were just because those sandhills are so vast.
Right. I
mean, they spend time up there in the afternoons and stuff and feed, but they're not really bedding out there too much. Mm-hmm. At least the whitetails aren't. The mule deer were.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, if you're that's what we're trying to get close to these deer with a bow. If you're with a gun, you could definitely set up further away and try to catch them going up into those hills.
And I know it's muzzleloader right now, but they do have a rifle season, so, mm-hmm. I mean, you can shoot forever out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, focus on any type of habitat change that there is. I mean, if it's straight grass, like just CRP fields, it really depends. I guess I'm imagining what we were in, but if it's mostly CRP open land that you're hunting, I would say spend some time driving around too, just seeing where the deer are. I mean, take a morning off, take an evening off, or maybe your first day or two, just driving around and look for deer.
I'd say most places in Nebraska, you can see a pretty good distance. So scouting from a distance was something we did a lot.
Yep. No, I think it's definitely valuable to do that. Next question, Brody.
Yes. Muzzleloader hunting in Kentucky. There's going to be a drop in temperature. Do you think the deer will be in the freshly shelled cornfields or back in the timber? It says there isn't many crop fields, and it is private ground.
If you've got a freshly picked cornfield and the temperature is dropping, yes, I would say that's definitely going to be where you're going to want to be set up on or close to. I mean,
weather. We just had warm temperatures for, a week here, mm-hmm. and we're expecting the deer to move back to corn now.
Yeah, which is kind of disappointing. We can touch on that later, but
yeah.
These warm temperatures have been good for us, but as it drops, we're expecting them to go back to, you know, that, you know, if you got standing beans or even a freshly cut bean field.
More traditional late-season food sources.
Yeah, you know, crop fields are going to be going back to that, mm-hmm. especially with colder temperatures. Next question.
Oh, yeah, this one's from Instagram. What do you think the most pressured states are, mainly regarding public land?
That's hard to say, just because we haven't hunted a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the hunting, the numbers, mm-hmm. though, of resident tags or just tags in general, Pennsylvania, Michigan, even Wisconsin.
Eastern states.
Yeah.
Wisconsin's a big state, but there is a lot of hunters, but people forget it is a big state. Those
right.
eastern states like Pennsylvania and New York,
mm-hmm.
stuff like
New
that.
New York is
just
one.
Just a really high density of hunters in a pretty small area.
Yep. West Virginia. I mean, as you go east, like the probably tell you the ones that get the least pressure easier than the ones that get the yeah. most pressure, but as you go further east, you're going to get more pressure,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
John is wanting to try to hunt some public land next year in Kansas with a bow. He says it's gun season there right now, so he's thinking about putting out some trail cameras next week after the rifle season is over. Which areas should I try to target with my cameras for the rut next year? These are really thick, overgrown areas left over from strip mining. A lot of water also from the leftover dumps. Any ideas?
You have some experience with the strip mine stuff, don't you,
yeah,
in Ohio?
It was, it's probably different. I'm assuming it's probably
that's
different.
That's more mountains than, almost where
yeah,
you
yeah, and like just a lot of timber where I'm assuming Kansas is going to be more open.
Mm-hmm.
I would focus on putting trail cameras. If you're looking to find places for the rut next year, near bedding areas or on a water source near a bedding area, if you said there's a lot of water around, maybe you could put it on a pond.
Mm-hmm.
And try to find where not only bucks are, but where does are. Because if you're going to go hunt there during the rut, it's going to help if you know where those doe bedding areas are and how to kind of intercept the buck going between them.
It doesn't seem like a similar area to like what Josh and them are hunting out in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
That's just pretty much a river bottom or a creek bottom or
mm-hmm.
drainages. It seems like he's hunting a lot bigger area
mm-hmm.
than just that.
I think, yeah, just focusing on finding out where, I mean, we always, I feel like we say this a lot, but we're always talking about bedding areas and it can't, you can always learn something from putting a camera in bedding areas,
mm-hmm.
and you can find out which ones they're, you know, using the most often. So, I mean, that's what we do.
We learned from that camera that we pulled the other day after
mm-hmm.
me and you shot that one that we probably should have been in that area from,
oh, yeah.
what, the 28th to basically the 14th, there was mature bucks.
Yeah, I mean, even till the 28th,
mm-hmm.
I think, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
There's, yeah. So putting them in bedding areas, you can never go wrong
no
with that.
No, for next year, I guess.
Yep. Well, and that's one of the things we always
yeah.
talk about, is putting a trail camera in a bedding area, coming back to it the next year, and it helps you
and
so
actually,
much.
And actually, where Brody just shot his buck, Greg had a camera in there all year last year, and
yep.
that thing was hot all the way till late muzzleloader season, like
yep.
late December. So
till the season was over, yeah.
yeah.
Next question?
Yep. We missed a question on Instagram, so we'll ask that one right now. Have you ever looked on a map and didn't think the bucks were bedding there, but when you got set up, they come from that area?
And didn't think
yeah.
that they were bedding there?
Yeah. They came from an area you weren't expecting.
Yeah, for sure.
You're not always right.
Yeah, and when you look back on it, though, you can generally find out why.
Mm-hmm.
Where Brody and I were just hunting, there were deer coming from the south of us. There's a little island between a couple meanders of the river, and those bucks were, it seemed like the majority of the bucks, really, as you know now that we're a couple days of hunting it seemed like the majority of the bucks were actually coming from that island, which, you know, is not a huge surprise, but we didn't necessarily expect them to be crossing that water like they were.
It kind of makes me think of when you shot that buck in Nebraska this year. You shot him, and then we ended up going back to his bed that he came from because we
mm-hmm.
pretty much watched him bed down that morning.
Mm-hmm.
And once we got over there, we realized why he was there, because it was so calm that morning.
Yep.
And he just bedded in a pocket that was really dense, so nothing could get to him without him being able to hear it. And then once the wind picked up, that buck got up, and he was going to move to a wind-based
yep.
bed, and that's when you ended up shooting him.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of two questions here you can probably wrap up into one, but the average distance you hike in on public land, and then how many acres of the public lands that you're hunting?
We get this question a lot. I would say it's easy to say, I guess, this. Sometimes we're 100 yards from the road, and sometimes I would say the furthest we go is a mile and a half, mile and three quarter, maybe 2 miles in
mm-hmm.
some places.
2 miles was Missouri. That was the furthest one I've been on this
yeah.
year. That was with Aaron down in Missouri.
And then I would say on average, though, 3/4 of a mile is, you know, 1/2 to 3/4 of a mile, I would say, is just an average.
And it's not always about the distance either. It's about the access. A lot of times we're using creative access
mm-hmm.
to get there, or just going up huge ridges and
we
and
shot
down.
That buck last night 300 yards from the road,
mm-hmm.
I would say. As the crow flies, it was 300 is what we said, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, in that instance, we're going to a place where we had to go through some thick stuff, kind of go down into a valley, pop back up, go through some strange terrain where they've, you know, maybe had a, I think it's, there was a quarry there at
mm-hmm.
some point. But it's just kind of going in an odd way where there's no parking lot. You know, you just are not that far from the road, and, you know, people are overlooking it.
We've been driving back and forth. Nobody's been parked there the whole gun season.
Just us.
I guess maybe we could dive into our gun season hunts.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about it so much.
Yeah, we'll come back to more questions once some more start coming in here. But we've had 3 days of gun hunting, and we've shot 2 bucks. Opening day, Jake and I shot one in the first half hour. Mm-hmm.
That was a spot that was pretty hot even during bow season, and mm-hmm. that's kind of what brought us back into that spot.
Yeah, kind of our strategy going into these seasons was to try a variety of tactics and try to kind of find what was working, and that's still going to be evolving after now. I mean, our first hunt, our strategy was to go into an area where we knew there was a number of mature bucks, mm-hmm. and we were going to use pressure to our advantage. Yep. We were looking at it, and, you know, that particular piece of public land is the center of that block. Mm-hmm. If you look at the whole road block, right in the middle, there's a creek bottom that runs through the middle of it, and it's super thick, tons of bedding habitat in there. And we've seen a number of mature bucks.
If you watch Sean's bow hunt, yep. I don't know how many mature bucks you guys saw that morning, mm-hmm. but that's all within probably a half mile of that block.
Yep.
You guys probably saw 10.
Yep.
10 mature bucks that day.
Driving in, and a lot of those deer were on private land, real but close. We knew that if
the cover is on the public land, right. most of it.
And if we knew if people were going to be pushing those deer mm-hmm. around, bumping them, doing drives, whatever, bumping them going in the morning, we knew that they were going to kind of suck back down into that bottom, and it just worked like a charm.
Yeah. We were a little worried when we got there because there was actually no vehicles parked there.
Yeah.
And then we got about 200 yards into it, and people were accessing off the private land. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard to say if that deer got bumped mm-hmm. or if he was just moving naturally.
Because he never moved. He wasn't right. running.
Obviously, it was the first day. And we were even here before we took the shot at the buck. We were hearing a buck chasing a doe or some mm-hmm. sort of chasing up in there, grunting. Mm-hmm. So he could have just been moving with rut act, you know, mm-hmm. just...
He was just standing still, and we saw him. And there is a lot of times where I've seen deer, in Wisconsin at least, where they've been pushed, but they get to a spot where they feel comfortable again. They just sit there for a really long time mm-hmm. and think about their next move.
Yep.
Which that could have been what he's doing. I guess yeah. we'll never know. But
definitely. So I think just focusing on definitely that first hunt, focusing on an area where you're hoping for a little bit of pressure, getting those deer moving, kind of moving them back into that bedding area. And from where we were kind of at the beginning of the bedding area.
Yeah.
And we were going to keep going mm-hmm. right through the center of it, just still hunting through, but we didn't even have to make it that mm-hmm. far. We shot that buck, what, a half hour in the season, I think. So
that's really something we're going to be doing, not what we've done now and had success with, and even we're hoping for even more pressure throughout the season mm-hmm. just to push those deer into pockets. And like the deer that Brody just shot, you guys found a pocket that lot of deer are pushed into.
Yep. Right after we got back, got that deer hung up, got Brody a tag, we had limited time on, it would have been that opener, so it was Saturday
afternoon.
And we had a couple different ideas. We were going to kind of go to some plan B spots because we didn't have a lot of time in our I don't know, plan A, plan B mm-hmm. spot. There were some guys pushing it, so we just went down the road, and there was a spot in the back of my mind where we had seen, I guess Greg, like Jake said, Greg had ran a trail camera back there during the whole season mm-hmm. last year. And there's a lot of deer in that area, but what really got us thinking about it was this summer we were doing some scouting and we came across an open area.
It's a dried up lake bottom, basically is what it is.
And it's mostly a dried up river bottom. You know, this river meanders through a low-lying area, and some years it's up, some years it's down. And when it's down, it creates these, I don't know, like lower, there's some lower areas.
Drowned out areas.
Yeah. There's some areas that are lower, and we've had dry.
There's a bunch of new growth there.
Yep.
And during the summer, the deer were just hammering it like it was a soybean field or something.
Yep.
It was pretty odd, actually. We never really seen anything like it.
We actually thought that the state had went in and planted beans.
Mm-hmm.
And as we got to looking at it more, we realized that spot specifically didn't.
We think it's some kind of smartweed. We're not exactly sure, but
yeah. And they were out there feeding on that. We talked about it back in the summer, just discussing it amongst ourselves. Mm-hmm. We were saying, man, if you could get in there and they're still in there during the gun and we figured they're going to run down in there in the gun seasons mm-hmm. too, that these areas have either really short stuff or stuff that's like 15 feet tall where a deer goes into it and you can't see mm-hmm. him. I mean, I went into it this summer and you guys couldn't see me, so we knew that that was likely going to be a place, as long as nobody had pushed it out, that those deer were going to feel comfortable. And if they were still feeding out there, mm-hmm. you were not only going to have that security cover, but you're also going to have, you know, a food source mm-hmm. there. So we went in, we observed it. Brody and I walked in. I think he was wearing jeans and a black sweatshirt. I was wearing a gray t-shirt and pants.
What was it, like an hour before dark, you guys snuck down in there over that hill?
Yep, and we popped in. We looked down at that bottom, and there was like, wow, probably 15 deer, probably 7 bucks. But, and they were all really little year and a half old bucks. But just a high concentration of deer like that, we knew as the weekend progressed and more people were pushing deer around that surrounding area, as long as nobody went right through the middle of that thing, that there were still going to be deer out there.
Because there was people pushing that on all sides pretty much that day that we drove in there.
Even the day that we just shot one yesterday, we watched the footage back, and as we were filming a buck, there's a guy up on the hillside behind him, but that was the key. There was people all around pushing those deer down into that bottom, and we were monitoring it. If we weren't hunting there, we were always going past it just to check and see if anybody had went through there as a group or anybody hunting in general. And we went in there the following day, saw really good deer activity in the evening, another kind of quick hunt. There's a number of reasons we didn't go there, but the main one was the wind was a little bit weird, so I was kind of unsure about doing it, and then we didn't have much time. So we popped in there, saw a bunch of bucks.
Just got there a little late to get a shot at that one.
Had one walk
right. That's the blog that we just posted.
Yep. Had one come right past the spot that we were going to. If we'd have been there 15 minutes earlier, we'd have got a shot. But when we went in yesterday morning, we had really high confidence because nobody had hunted it for 2 days. Everybody had been hunting around the outskirts of it.
I'd say it was the most confidence any of us have had going into a spot the whole year. You tried to bet me $100 that you were going to shoot a buck, and I was going to bet you, but I knew you were going to, I really had a feeling you guys were going to shoot one too, so I didn't bet you.
Then, yes.
But I didn't.
Yeah. I wish we would have. Yesterday, though, we went in there in the morning, right off the bat, had a buck walk right past us at about 70 yards, and it was just low enough camera light that we decided to pass, and right after that, an even bigger buck was out at about 200, about 250 yards out, just too far for as windy as conditions as it is. You know, we're liking them to be, you know, 150 and in. And didn't see a whole lot after that.
We watched him bed down, actually, out there.
Yep.
Or you thought you did, and then we came back and watched it, and we're pretty sure he bedded down right down in that lake bottom.
Yep. Right on a transition of two different vegetation types out there. There was kind of...
shorter grass and taller grass.
Maybe chest-high grass or up to their neck.
You could just see his antlers, basically, where he lay down. Then you could just see him plop right down.
Yep. So... then we went back in the evening, knew it was going to be good. That's when we knew it was going to be good, because they were feeding out there, and we'd watched a buck bed out there. We watched that buck bed.
Two bucks.
Yeah, two bucks. Yeah. Two bucks that we were going to shoot.
And they came by in the dark in that one.
Yep. So we went back out, had some pressure around us. I mean, we could hear people shooting 3/4 of a mile away to the west and to the south, and we saw a real nice buck cross the river. And then the deer were kind of on edge last night just simply because of the pressure, kind of people banging around and just so much wind.
Yeah, the wind was howling last night.
And they were just being real nervous.
Every buck you guys saw was running.
Yeah, they were. They were not standing around feeding like they had been the nights prior. And I think the wind just kind of got them off a little bit. I think that they would have, even with that shooting, because they were the two nights prior, but that wind was just howling. And it was calm the two nights prior. It was the major difference. And... sure enough, right there at last, well, no, not even at last light, like 4:30, right about the time, a little bit later than when we'd seen the deer prior, but a real nice buck came across the river.
And you'll have to watch the blog tomorrow or the next day to see what happens. It's pretty weird. It's pretty exciting hunt.
Yep, it was a lot of fun, and Brody made a great shot, and he didn't go far, so...
They actually got closer after Brody shot him. He was only about 25 yards away when Brody shot him. It's pretty awesome footage.
But really the main thing, on the consistency there, I guess, is trying to find places where deer are going to go to feel, you know, and they feel comfortable there. Mm-hmm. And avoiding.
They didn't
that
only
pressure.
Feel comfortable bedding down where you guys were hunting, but they also felt comfortable feeding on that just low, like that drowned out spot with the new vegetation in it, which is pretty cool. We've never seen anything like that really, where the deer are just hammering a native food source like it's a crop field or something like that.
It's really cool. And honestly, we keep joking, and I noticed a couple times we said field.
Yeah.
It's not a field. It's just like some drowned out little. It would be a great duck hole if there was water in it, I guess, is the best way to explain it. But it's just dried up, and now it's been dry for so long that it's hard, and there's green vegetation growing up. But pretty cool spot, pretty cool find. And I think, well, I know for a fact if I'd have had a tag, I would have shot a buck as well, because we had that same buck that we saw earlier come right past us. So we're probably going to try to go back to that spot. It's going to be really it's really going to depend on
if it is pushed, like it's public land, people can walk through it and we won't have a clue.
Yeah.
You know?
So we'll probably try it again. But what we're also going to do moving forward is now that we've kind of got a pattern on that, we're going to bounce around to a couple different areas along these rivers around our area and kind of try to find some of those
similar areas.
Yeah. Hard to get to pockets where the deer potentially might be feeding, but we know they're going to be bedding down there if nobody's been through them, and we're just going to observe in the evenings. Probably pop out there in the last hour, half hour of daylight, and just kind of creep in, be looking from a distance with binos or a spotting scope, just try to find some bucks.
Yep.
And doing that the other night paid off huge. I mean, we've been seeing, I think we've counted 6 bucks that we'd have shot back in there at least in the last,
I'd say,
2 days.
Two really mature bucks and a handful of really nice, really nice bucks. But Brody, you got any fresh questions?
Someone's wondering what kind of headlamps we use.
We use the Cabela's Alaskan Guide headlamps. Mm-hmm. They have, the ones that we use have a green and like the LED beams on them, and I like to use the LED beam because the green's just not quite strong enough, and it kind of can be hard to see, but they both work really well. I mean, I've used both of them, like them both.
We use the green a lot in gray light situations.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If you have, I think if you have gray light, the green's better. Mm-hmm. If it's pitch black, the I mean, Brody and I were using the white light this morning, and once we got set up, as soon as we got set up and it got daylight, there was deer out there, so they definitely didn't see it.
Someone's wondering, as time goes on, whether it be this season or upcoming seasons, do you guys plan on taking more out-of-state whitetail trips? And if so, what do you have in mind? Any high-pressured states?
Yeah, we definitely want to do more. It just depends on how far away we can get and what, you know.
I know you'd really like to go east, like to Pennsylvania or somewhere like that.
And it depends mostly on like how much we can afford to do, I guess, is the big thing. Like it takes a lot to go on a trip.
Yeah.
I mean, Nebraska was pretty expensive. Well, I mean, it was cheap.
The tag is cheap.
It's cheap for most people, I'd say, but expensive for us currently.
Yeah.
But
I know Aaron really wants to do something down south, like Mississippi or something like that. The rut's just about to start, or just starting down there, so that would be a pretty fun trip.
Yeah, I think just trying to focus on, you know, I would like to do some western stuff, but also like to go back
areas
east
that aren't destination states, just states that are heavily pressured and maybe don't get as much press or there's probably not as many videos on them, you know.
I'm actually planning on going, and maybe even these guys too, we haven't decided for sure, but I'm actually planning on going back for Ohio's 4-day muzzleloader season. May hunt my grandpa's farm a little bit, but probably going to, well, definitely going to try some public land as well.
Got some more questions, Brody?
Yes. Just a second. How about this? Do you guys try and focus on south-facing slopes now that the temps are starting to drop? If not, what do you focus on with these colder temps?
I don't really pay much attention to which way the slope's facing unless it's based off of the wind.
I've heard, we watched that Dan Infault video, I think this summer, where he talks about, a lot of people talk about looking for sheds on south-facing hillsides. And the reason for that is the majority of the time during the winter, it's north wind, and those deer are bedding on the south sides of hills.
Yeah.
And that's where they're spending most of their time. That has a lot to do with why you find a lot of sheds there during the winter, too, not just because the sun's melting all the...
Right. I mean, it... To me, I've never... I mean, I keep saying this. Like, I've never seen anything more of a sure thing than a deer is going to bed on a hill. If he's going to bed on a hill, he's... Or on the flat ground.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to bed with their wind at their back, and they're going to be looking down the hill. So if you've got a south-facing slope and you've got a south wind, they are not going to bed there. I mean, maybe a doe family group will plop up on top of that and be looking in every direction.
And a mature buck and, like, heavily pressure. It would be a pretty weird situation where they went as far as what we've seen, you know.
Yep. I mean, every single deer we've seen bed down this season, and we've seen quite a few of them, beds down with the wind at their back looking down the hill in a hilly situation. So, to answer the question, if not focusing on those south wind slope or south facing slopes, I'm just looking mostly for, at least on public land, and if I was on private land too, smaller properties or whatever, I'm bouncing around to places where I think, okay, what's the food source there, whether that be crop field or maybe, you know, what was the acorn crop like in that area? What, you know, some places that we hunt, there's a really high density of locust trees and they drop those locust ponds. Looking for a food source near a bedding area where I think the deer are going to be going to avoid pressure. And as that season progresses, on public, private, whatever, you're getting towards, you know, if a place is going to got pressured, it's been pressured. Try to find, it gets harder to find that unpressured area, but once you do, you're in them, and you're in all of them because they're all there.
They're stacked up.
Just like what we found when Brody and I were hunting back in that river bottom.
And it, especially with the extremely cold temperatures, I know like up in northern Wisconsin, they just call them deer yards because, I mean, they find a place where they got food and every single deer is there, you know.
Exactly.
This one's from Instagram. Someone has a question about access. He says he keeps bumping deer and then not seeing them trying to go in the dark and hang and hunt. Is there anything he can do to be able to get in without spooking them or try a different route? Or...
Sometimes it just takes getting in there earlier. If you're running into deer in the dark,
there's a chance that you're probably walking through their food source if you're getting in there really before dark.
Or I would call it more of like a staging area. You know, a lot of people talk about a staging area before coming out of bed, before they go to a destination food source, but... There's, you know, if you watch a deer, you observe one, get out of bed, then go to, you know, point A, then point B, then point C, you know, there's always some amount of, like, staging before they make it to their destination in the evening. Same thing in reverse in the morning, you know, if you're going back through, even if you're going to a bedding area, if you're passing, you know, a little acorn flat or something, you're going to bump those deer. There's a spot where... back in October, Sean and I had an encounter with a nice buck on the ground. We heard two bucks fighting, snuck up on him, grunted, and the buck came in. We wanted to hunt there. Brody and I hunted in there a couple days after that. And the problem was, is those deer were staging up actually in the opposite side of the bedding area than we expected. So before they were going back to bed, we were walking through them to get to that bedding area, and we spooked a bunch of them, and we didn't really see much that morning. I mean, we pretty much knew that we were messed up. So rethink it in relation to where they may be feeding. Because if you're catching them in the dark, you're either not early enough and they're back in their bed and you're spooking them from their beds, or you're walking through some amount of staging area. And you know, a lot of bedding areas are a staging area, so it makes it tough, but... if you're going in a gray light or anything like that, you can definitely be messing things up because you're going in too late. Always try to be in there as early as possible. And it's hard, but, and we don't always do a great job of it, but I definitely don't.
Just got to learn from it.
Yep. Or go in there later too. I mean, try not going in the dark. I mean, when I say I'm not good at it, is a lot of times I'll just wait. I'm okay with that. I mean, gun season, we got there. That opening day, we got there.
Just going so slow and quiet. Like, if you can't hear yourself, they probably can't hear you either.
Right. And I think a lot of times too, people either underestimate themselves or they, I think a big thing is if you're going somewhere, then you're always concerned that you're late. If you're not going anywhere, like when we're still hunting, can't be late. You know, we're just going. Yeah. We're just, once we're, you know, at the location or close to the bedding area, there's no time. Time is irrelevant. You're just going slow.
You guys spotted that deer bedded when you were with Sean.
Three of them bedded bucks, and one of them was a good one. Mm-hmm. So you can definitely go slow enough. I mean, that buck was bedded 35 yards away from us looking at us. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, you can do it. It's, you can, and especially if it's dark.
This question's for Zach. He says he often hears you talking about hunting hill country in Ohio. Just for context, he wants to know, like, how much your elevation changed from top to bottom where you typically hunted, and if there's agriculture, was it at the top or the bottom?
There was no ag. Elevation number. I don't remember or know right off the top of my head how much it changed. There was, I don't know a number for that. But there was no ag, and a lot of the time when we were hunting was like benches. So like you have the top, and then you have a bench on like the middle or the upper third, and then you have the valley that goes down into the very bottom. And a lot of times what we were focusing on were those benches and the saddles that connected those benches.
Mm-hmm. And Ben's been hunting an area like that a lot this year, hasn't he? He's learned quite a bit.
Yeah, and one of my friends, my friend that I hunted with before I came here all the time, he's hunting really extreme terrain, really steep stuff, and he's finding that the majority of the bedding is on kind of those big points. They're secondary points, but they go way out, and the deer can bed out on a point, and they can see just for forever away.
It's kind of flatter where they're bedding, and then they can just look down on these.
It's kind of just
huge open bottoms.
Right, a kind of a rounded.
Like, and is it really dense behind where they're bedding too, or not?
Yeah, so when they're bedding on really anywhere, I think in hill country, like we were just in that place, tracking that buck, and we were seeing, like, when you're on the upper third, they're going to bed on a transition line where if they get spooked from something below them, they can just escape into thick cover, or they can go down low and be in the bottom.
With the wind at their back, they can hear or they can smell whatever's coming or hear whatever's coming through that thick cover and run down in the bottom if they have to.
Yep.
And then they can sit, there's a trail right below them where they can sit and watch does pass by during the rut.
And that's a big thing too for, I think, hilly country, you know, a place where a deer can bed and see other deer moving. That place that I killed last year, you know, it's definitely not like the Ohio stuff that, I don't know, we kind of originally were talking about, but I think a good lesson can come in this is that deer, those deer, those bucks were bedding where they could see does coming to
the destination food source. It was just a trail that was basically carved in the hillside. It was like a cattle path almost.
Yep.
Another question, Brody?
Yep. Have you ever encountered mature bucks moving bedding areas come late season? This guy's hunting in New York on public land. He says, I hunt public land, mostly dealing with thick swamps and finding the areas these deer move to varies year to year in a swamp area. Where would you look for bucks come late season with a huge abundance of thick areas and big cattail marshes?
Well, the question of deer moving late season or changing bedding areas, yes. I mean, they're
first
not going to be.
First thing I think of is just like as simple as just a wind switch during the day. They might just get up and they might just move throughout their bedding area, but they're going to move. And if you're close enough to that, you might catch them, which is what happened in Nebraska early season.
Yep.
But sometimes they'll just get up and move to a completely different bedding area too, I think.
Yeah, and I think, I guess, I don't know if the question, I'm thinking of the question more along the lines of, are they going to be in the same places they were in in October? I guess is that's what I was thinking along the lines of.
Yep, me too.
So, if that's the question, then definitely. I mean, they will be in some of those same locations, but there's a, you know, the habitat where we talk about a lot is like, in the first day of season, the bedding areas, you know, bedding options is this big. And then by the end of season, it's this big. You know, it just is totally shrinking. Mm-hmm. You know, some of those places, you know, in the big, if you're in New York, if you've got low-lying marshy areas and then, you know, thick bedding areas in the hills, I know a lot of times in the timber, those, you know, timber bedding areas kind of lose that cover, yeah. And they can shift, and maybe they're going to shift down into that cattail marsh or whatever that's got a higher density of vegetation where they can run in there and nothing can see them, nothing can get to them. I feel like a lot of times what I've seen late season is, and in certain areas, it's spot dependent and pressure dependent, but they're going to go into those really thick areas that mm-hmm. are like hard for a human to actually yeah. even walk in. And mm-hmm. they're going to go bed in the middle of it, especially on calm days. If it's a calm day, they're going to bed in the middle of it because how's anything going to get to them without mm-hmm. them hearing it? They're just simply not.
Mm-hmm. This question is kind of similar to that same thing, but in your experience, how far are you seeing bucks move on average out of bedding in the evenings? He's hunting in Northwest Carolina hill country.
How far do you see them move out of beds yep. in the evening?
Before dark, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
We've been seeing this time of the year pretty much anywhere from what is apparently like 150 yards to maybe 300 yards. Mm-hmm. And then I would say that's pretty consistent throughout the season, though. We're always trying to set up closer than that. Early October.
Basically, as close as you can push when yeah. you feel comfortable.
Yeah. I mean, I would say October, too, you're talking, you know, sometimes they're only moving 70 yards. I mean, even in the buck nest last year, like, it seemed like we were in them and, like, we were in bucks, but, like, we weren't even really close. Like, they were so far away yeah. and we couldn't get any closer because they were only moving, you know, maybe 100 yards, yeah.
But they're just moving in a really small circle.
Where you can't get yeah. to. So it made that spot's really tough. Trying to think of a couple different options or different scenarios here. And then, you know, in timber too, I think if they've got, you know, maybe they're bedding, a buck is bedding out on a secondary point and he's feeding up on an oak ridge, you know, a lot of times they don't even have to go
or in
50 yards or in his bed.
That Missouri buck, that 8-pointer that you guys saw, mm-hmm. he was bedding down in a river bottom, right?
Yep,
but he was
right
feeding
on the transition
up on
line.
He was feeding up on an oak ridge, and you guys were what, 8?
We were 100 yards 100 from yards. It, and he walked about 70 yards, you know, from his bed.
And Aaron might have failed a tag this year.
Yeah.
Had he moved 20 more yards. I hope he's watching.
Ooh. But yeah, in general, I would say early season, they're moving less. As the season progresses, you know, especially once you get into late October till the end of season, they're moving 150 to 300 yards. It's just to put a number on it. Now, don't get me wrong. Also, watch bucks go like 600 yards yeah. just like that.
I mean, a lot of those deer that you guys saw that day, they're getting pushed. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. that's not what you're, well, we kind of are expecting it this time of year, but those deer might be moving a mile.
Right. Yep.
Because who knows how far that buck came from that you guys saw across the river.
I think they're betting. To be honest with you, I think they're betting right there.
Yeah, but didn't you see him come running across that river bottom or not?
The one that we got?
No, the one that ran or swam across the river and then came tearing by you guys.
Yeah, later. he was bedded there
was
too,
he?
I think.
He still
so
moved
he
how far, though?
Well, he in total, I guess he would have moved pretty far, but he never made it 300 yards from his bed
okay.
that we could see. I mean, okay. he would have eventually made it, I guess, about 400 yards from his bed mm-hmm. that we could tell.
I
think he was going to a more secure location
yeah.
even.
Mm-hmm.
Will you guys be using calling tactics at this point in the season?
I don't like to right now just because it's gun season, but yeah, if it was bow season, I would. Or if I was on private land,
mm-hmm.
I would. I think that
I don't think it can ever hurt, especially if a deer is not coming in your, I mean, obviously don't overcall at him, but at least give it a shot. You know,
and
it might trigger something and we'll come check it out.
Mm-hmm. And I think rattling, like right now.
You guys
saw
those bucks going at it.
In my whole hunting career, I've always seen the most fighting or sparring. But I've seen some pretty dang aggressive fights late into December, early January, every year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that rattling, especially if you've got like a decoy and a food source or something, mm-hmm. like that could really work.
You wanted to bring a decoy out, but yeah. Brody shot that one the other day until you realized it was gun season.
I don't know what I was thinking. I tend to talk out loud a lot of what I'm thinking about, and I was like, we could bring a decoy in. Or I was saying, I wish we would have found this during bow season. We can hunt here with a decoy easy. We could bring a decoy in here now. And I was like, that's stupid. Don't bring a decoy out when you're gun hunting or it's gun season.
When you guys are looking for bedding, what is the biggest factor as far as habitat is concerned?
Transition lines is the biggest factor, I would say. Every bed that we find, unless it's in open timber, is going to be on a transition line. But
maybe
even,
just define transition lines once.
Yeah, well, and even, I guess, before I get into that, well, I'll talk about habitat. Or vegetation type transition lines is any type of change from one vegetation type to another. So the examples that I like to use are like a river bottom open maple forest meeting up with a cedar patch. Right where that transition line meets, that's where those deer are going to bed, especially if the elevation changes. So like if you've got flat river bottom into like a, you know, a ridge going up, they're going to bed right on that transition line or inside of that transition line where they can see out.
Or even just in like a flat river bottom like where you guys were hunting, it's just a different length of grass that they're bedding right on the edge of.
Or if you had cattails or right along a river.
A lot of times in the cattail marshes, they'll be underneath those lone trees because it's a high spot out there.
That's a transition line though.
Yeah.
Anything that's different. So in hill country even, a lot of times there's, you know, these valley on either side of a little secondary ridge that goes out. If you got the ridge kind of plays out, two valleys on either side, I always think of that as almost a transition line. It's not a vegetation transition line, but it's some sort of
topography
change. They bed right out in the open. But a lot of times in our area especially, we're looking for any type of change. So if you, I'm trying to think of a good way to explain it easy. If you, if you're looking at the map and you see even a change of color.
I think Greg might be home.
What time is it? Probably close.
18?
Yeah. We've been bumming at Greg's house all day and he hasn't been here. Just playing with his pets, doing some work.
But anywhere with that, if you're looking at the map and you can see where there's a change in color in maybe like a CRP field or a cattail marsh or something like that. Anytime you're seeing that, anytime you're seeing it in timber, those are the things that we're focusing on before we go out and scout those areas for bedding.
Can save you a lot of time.
Oh, yeah. And you can X out, I mean, huge areas that, you know, especially once you start to see some consistency in what you've seen on the map. So, okay, I've seen that when it looks like this on the map, this is a transition between, you know, canary grass and cattails, and those beds are on those.
And that's exactly what we're going to do. We're just going to look for similar spots to where you guys just found where Brody killed that buck, because they're stacked in there, and we can look at probably 100 spots like that.
Oh, real fast, real fast. We can eliminate a lot of stuff that we might have wasted a little bit of time on.
Having a question about late season hunting, on hunting green food sources in the evenings.
If it's warm, we've been talking about this a lot.
That's why Zach actually was thinking about buying a tag for just 2 days when he could get a tag for 9 days because the temperature actually cooled down dramatically today. And all those deer that him and Brody saw were on a green food source because it was warm. And now we're afraid they're going to be moving back to corn on the private land.
And I don't like that.
So he was going to sacrifice a 9-day tag for a 2-day tag.
For maybe this morning. Yeah. I think that if you've got a green food source, if you have a clover plot or an alfalfa field and it's warm, it's almost like we were just talking about this when Scott was here doing the podcast with us last week, I believe.
Yeah, Friday.
If you have a green food source, they're going to really hammer it in the evenings, and it's almost like it's their last chance. Like, because after a certain point, you know, that's just going to die off and be no good. But they were hammering a green food source
the last couple days.
And it's been, just to put it into like a number perspective, I think it was 65 is a high yesterday.
Yeah.
60 the day before.
I was walking around in a t-shirt trying to get some deer moving for you guys the day before that.
Yep.
Crazy. And I mean, didn't see a difference in deer activity.
No.
Not where you guys were.
No, definitely not. And that was movement, natural movement. That wasn't, you know, mm-hmm. that wasn't anything.
And that's because you're watching them get up out of their beds. Like, mm-hmm. like you always talk about, they're not moving out of that bubble until after dark. They're not moving up on those ridges to those crop fields till after dark. No.
And as it gets colder, though, my fear is that they're going to leave those river bottoms and go bed on a private piece that is not getting pressure. Because those are definitely out there.
Davin's wanting to know what type of camera we use for filming.
We have a Sony Z150 here. We have a Canon G30.
This is filmed the most kills this year.
Yeah, I think, what did we just said? That one hadn't filmed
a kill yet. This year. Except for Brody's bow kill. It's doe kill. Brody's doe kill.
Where's that Audi X at?
I don't know.
Yeah,
probably in the garbage.
Yeah, Jake broke the camera this year. Yeah, it's over there. But
got a little rain on it.
Yeah.
You guys had some rain pour on you guys yesterday. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's part of the video vlogging Brody's kill. Brody's trying not to get the muzzleloader wet so it doesn't misfire, and Zach's got the camera buried underneath him, and they just get dumped on with rain for probably, 5 minutes,
you
said?
Yeah, probably about 5 minutes. But really, any, I don't know, HD camera.
They make pretty good cameras nowadays. I mean, especially for just, like, self-filming yourself. If you're just doing it for yourself,
Self-filming yourself?
Yeah.
I think the G30 and, like, a Sony, I think it's a PMX X70. Mm-hmm. Those...
Probably the more important thing, especially for self-filming yourself, is having that controller so you can just control it with one hand and have your bow or whatever else in the other hand, mm-hmm. and then you're ready. Just like, watch Greg's hunt. I mean,
if you don't
have a release that doesn't flop down and smack on stuff.
Right.
Wants to know if we are finding higher concentrations or pockets of deer now because of the pressure.
Yeah. For sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, we've seen so many bucks. Shot that one last night, and we were like, this is a different one we haven't even seen yet. Every time we go out there, it's different bucks. So there's a bunch of deer in there, and they're definitely higher concentrations than
you said. It's the highest concentration of basically of deer that you've seen during gun season since you've been here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Someone's wanting to know, Zach, if you feel that deer stack mostly timbered areas of southern Ohio public land, same as in the Iowa public land that you hunt? And also, would you use a hang and hunt setup or climber in southern Ohio public?
I would probably use a climber in southern Ohio just because a lot of straight trees, which I'm sure you've probably found. Those straight trees, you know, for using the setup that we use, we only use 4 sticks here because we do have so much more cover with those horizontal branches, but if I didn't have horizontal branches, there's no way I'd be using 4 sticks. Mm-hmm.
I still would be because I'm scared of heights.
Yeah. But if I was in a climber, I would get pretty far up there in those hilly areas too, because a lot of times you're wanting to hunt kind of on that upper third, but you need to get high enough that you're not totally at eye level with the deer, and a climber's going to allow you to do that without carrying 10 sticks. But what was the other part of the question? Something about, do I think deer stack and the same as they do in southern Iowa?
Yes. Do you feel the deer stack in mostly timbered areas of southern Ohio public lands, same as in the Iowa public lands that you hunt?
I think that they're more spread out in the southern Ohio stuff. I don't think that they're... I mean, I think that there's definitely still that opportunity for finding a really good bedding pocket, you know, maybe a clear cut or... mostly just like clear cuts, I think, or maybe some openings that have been reclaimed. But the thing that's harder about finding that spot is you can't observe it like we can here a lot of times. A lot of times we can kind of watch something from a distance, especially the open areas here, and see if deer are coming from them. Even on the road, we're doing that a lot. In Ohio, southern Ohio, you can't do that as much, but you can definitely do it by scouting the edges of those clear cuts and stuff and just seeing what types of tracks are coming out of them. Find a bunch of tracks in there, then they're probably stacked in that bedding area. And I would say they're definitely less likely to leave that clear cut. I'm using a clear cut as an example. Less likely to walk out of that thing in daylight, like during a gun season, than they are.
Is your gun season still going on up there right now?
I think it's over now. I think it was over this weekend. Anything else?
Yeah, question about hunting marshes this time of year in Wisconsin with the water freezing. Do you guys think deer will bed more on the transitions and the high spots and islands near the mainland rather than deeper in the marsh so they avoid walking on the ice?
I think they'll bed do whatever deeper. They can to get away from the pressure. Alive. They'll break right through that ice a lot of times or walk across the top of it. I mean, if they're in pressured areas, they're going to, I'm guessing he's probably in cattails if he's in Wisconsin and wetlands. And they'll just get to those islands of trees out in the middle of marshes, and even with the pressure, they just bounce back and forth to those throughout the day.
Yeah, I think if they're, they're going to go out in those risen up areas just like they were. And actually, if there's ice, I think to a certain degree, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, that's just another place they can actually lay down instead of laying down in water.
A lot of times.
Just lay down right on that ice versus...
I mean, I know they lay out, like they lay right on top of like muskrat houses and stuff like that even. It's crazy what they do to get away from people.
Someone's wanting to know, Zach, on how you set up and kneel when you're bow hunting from the ground. Just maybe talk about how things you've learned about how you want to be set up.
It sucks, but like a lot of times I'm just sitting like a catcher, like between pitches, I guess, like straight on my knees.
It would probably be helpful to get like those
knee savers. Oh, it would be for sure. Or like like I've always thought about getting like gardening knee pads or something, just that it would help a little bit. And it's just basically my legs are like that. Got my
A lot of times you'll try to find a spot, at least when you killed your buck, you'll find a spot with enough cover around where you can just be standing, too, and just looking. Yeah, that helps a lot when you can just go from sitting down or kneeling down to standing up. It just kind of relieves some of the pain if you're doing both.
Or sitting, like what I was doing, what I was doing when that buck came in was standing on that log, but that log that I was standing on, I was also using as like a seat, just like I'm sitting on this stool.
Yeah. That's a horizontal log.
That's ideal, but the reason I like to be on my knees like that is because I can hunch over, and when I'm wearing that suit,
be as low as you possibly can.
So like you can get your body like probably, you know, that far from the ground.
Yeah, you just look like grass. Yeah. And then you, when you're ready to shoot and they're not looking or whatever, you draw and pop up, and you're in a position for a good shot.
Every situation's different, I would say, on that for sure.
Just got to practice it.
And the big thing is, too, that I like to do, and I know there, I've you know, read and watched videos about other guys, their style. What I like to do is to be hunched over and draw facing my arrow facing the ground and then go up. I know some people will sit with their butt on the ground, back against the tree, and they'll have their bow on their left side, and they'll just be able to draw like this. And I think that works too. It's just
depending on... But if you're on your knees, you're not limited to just shooting out in front of you as much. I mean, I know you can swing still, but if you're on your knees, you can turn your whole torso.
I think that if I was in open timber and going to be setting up on the ground...
Almost just like turkey hunting, you need to be right up against that
tree. Right up against a tree, drawing like that. In situations that we're in a lot of times, we're down low... in river bottoms.
With canary grass around you.
Canary grass, willows around us, and able to stay really low, get out of sight. And every drawing situation's different, but really make sure where those cams are, because and where your arrow is. Ben, we were just talking about Ben, my buddy from Ohio, missed one a couple weeks ago, because he drew back, and he shot, and his arrow had hit the cover in front of him, kind of the amount of... vegetation.
You try to break all that stuff out of the way beforehand if possible, because that's probably not, shouldn't be the last thing you're thinking about it, but it's the last thing you want to be thinking about when you're trying to be focused on that spot on the deer.
I always draw. You guys see how many times I draw. I draw because I get bored, but Yeah, I always draw, make sure where my arrow cams are. It's so important because you don't want to finally get that opportunity and then doink your arrow off of a branch. Yep. That just would not be fun. Right, Ben?
Don't mean to ignite your guys' Ohio State-Wisconsin rivalry, but there's a little bit of
Big Ten champs,
there's a little bit of talk on Facebook going on there, but
awesome. Yeah, go Ohio State.
In flatland hunting, what do you guys usually look for buck bedding?
The transition of vegetation types, especially then, whether that be river bottom, CRP, marsh, anything that is a change in vegetation. I mean,
the thing with flatland hunting is usually you could even just get online on those maps and you can just see where those deer are bedding. It just spider webs out of wherever those beds are.
Yep.
There's just beat down trails.
Cattail marshes are like so easy to find on. I guess I haven't hunted a ton of them, but you can tell okay, that's a bed because there's, from your view above, there's a spot and there's trails, spokes on a wheel.
Yeah. Especially when it's just grassland, there's not a bunch of timber. I mean, you can look right on a map, and a lot of times that's how you eliminate a lot of those spots. But obviously, a lot of other people are probably doing that, looking at it, so you just need to kind of fine-tune it. But you can definitely narrow down a lot of places.
Someone's wanting to know if you guys adjust your tactics based on buck-to-doe ratios that you've observed.
A lot of times on public land, if we find high doe density, that's what we want. We want as many does as possible. Timber Nest was a classic example The spot where Jake and I got that one on the ground, that was a high doe density area. The spot where Greg and I encountered
have been seeing quite a few does where Brody just shot that one, haven't you?
Yeah, a bunch of does there. I would say you want, at least on public land, I don't know. I don't know enough about buck to doe ratios to give an exact answer, but I think that I think there's a lot of places where,
I mean, that's what their world revolves around for a good period of the year, so that's
good part of the hunting season at least. So you want to be around the highest doe density, because that's even if the bucks aren't there and October, they're going to be there in November.
And even in early October, they're still paying attention. Right. They're cutting those doe trails just to look for that first one, because there will be one that pops early.
That is all I got for questions right now.
I guess we can wrap her up. It's got to be getting close to an hour.
56 minutes. Yeah. All right. Well, as we move forward towards the second gun season, our strategy is going to kind of be try to find some places like
we're gonna be hitting up the bigger, some of our really harder big pieces.
Yeah, harder to get to places.
Because of the more pressure, we're hoping they're just piled back in those places. Yeah, and we're obviously gonna keep an eye on that spot where Brody saw that buck or shot his buck, because there's a ton of them in there.
Yeah, right, I'm trying to find some consistency too, in other type of terrain, other type of vegetation, but trying to check out a couple different areas that are like the one that Brody and I have been hunting. Mm-hmm. Keep an eye on that one. We're going to try. I like to still hunt. I don't like to sit around, but yesterday it was warm, so I didn't have to complain too much about how cold it was. But if
complained
it's
going
to
be a lot today, though.
Yeah.
It's cold and windy.
Don't like that.
And he wasn't even hunting. We were inside of it. Just complained about how cold it was in Greg's house.
If it's cold, we'll be doing still hunting. We'll probably try some more wind bumping. We tried a little wind bump that we hadn't really planned a lot. We didn't plan it for very long. We were just eating lunch, and we drew it up real fast, and it worked.
It's 70 degrees. Let's go try to get it moving.
Yeah, and we had does and standing in range. We had some bucks, some small bucks kind of go past us. But it's going to work. It's just a matter of having the right deer and being in the right spot. But we're going to try some more of that, and hopefully the second gun season's as good as the first. Mm-hmm. We filled those two tags quick, and I'll have a tag, and Sean will have a tag. So
blog up right now from the second day of gun season, and Brody should be done within the next 2 days, I would assume, and that's a pretty awesome hunt.
That'll be done tomorrow, no doubt.
So. Well, be on the lookout for that.
Yep.
Thanks for watching.
Yep, thank you. Good luck.